entire community. That is what we do here at Community Radio. We keep independent news and information flowing to you right now. Give us that call. Just a few seconds left to support Positively Revolting this morning.
The number
877-500-5266.
Do it. Oh, that's right.
800.
You all know it. You've heard it. You've heard it all morning.
877-500-5266.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 9:01 a.m. And stay tuned for APA Compass with special guest Jaideep. And you'll hear more about it in just a moment.
Friday, May 2nd, 12 noon to 1:30, I will be featuring the music of Lori Lewis. The San Francisco Bay Area was a hotbed of traditional and acoustic music beginning in the 1960s. Starting with the Arkansas Sheiks and the Good Old Persons, she then started her own band, the Grant Street String Band. For the last dozen years, she and her partner, Tom Rosen, have fronted her band, always attracting the highest quality musicians. Blending traditional and contemporary material, she has forged a unique sound. A limited number of One Evening in May, her brand new CD, will be available as a thank you gift for your membership. Tune in Friday, May 2nd, 12 noon to 1:30.
Good morning. You're listening to APA Compass, the Pacific Northwest's only Asian Pacific American public affairs radio program with your hosts, Sarika Mehta and Andrew Yeh. On today's program, we'll be discussing the severe bullying and harassment of Sikh American children with our guest, Dr. Jaideep Singh, who is a scholar with the Islamophobia Research and Documentation Project at UC Berkeley's Center of Race and Gender. But first, we have Keep Portland White, an angry APA minute from the hipster librarian, Linda Uweki Absher. Linda Uweki Absher has written a piece entitled
Keep Portland White.
Now, Linda, could you tell us why you wrote this essay?
Well, I've lived in Portland since 1995, and before that, I lived in San Francisco. When you live in San Francisco, I'd say every other person is probably going to be Asian or is Asian. But up here, I seem to be a curiosity, let's say. My name is Linda Uweki Absher, and this is my angry APA minute. Sitting in traffic and staring at the car in front of me, a tastefully muddy Subaru Outback with the requisite Thule bike rack, I spotted this on the bumper. Keep Portland weird. Yet another Portlander proclaiming their uniqueness by slapping on their car the most overused soundbite attached to the place I live. There is an element of truth to the sentiment. To the friends who suffer the ignominy of existing in California or New York, I live in hipster Valhalla, a happily ironic place where vegan food carts abound and local vore beer flows from repurposed fixtures. It's a place where young creatives commute by fixie bikes, towing babies or dogs to careers involving DIY charcuterie, vintage buttons, or recycled wooden paneling. But as I wander past the organic coffee houses chock full of 30-ish men with full-on lumberjack beards and defiant beer bellies, or boutiques filled with mock Goodwill cardigans selling for prices once considered exorbitant monthly rent, the message is unmistakable. I am not a member of the Keeping It Weird Club. I realize that's the first thing expected from a Portland hipster, but it's true. I live in a ridiculously overeducated neighborhood, riddled with organic farming emporiums and yoga studios. I also have a job that's the wet dream of every liberal arts graduate, a librarian. But there's one thing that makes me different from the exquisitely toned women feeding chickens in their backyards. I am the wrong color. Not that I'm harassed for my interesting, as one library user put it, looks, but quite the opposite. I am constantly celebrated for being an official person of color. Not a week goes by without someone insisting upon the opportunity to honor my person of colorness, which consists of describing their week, month, or year-long trip to Japan, followed by a detailed rave about the culture, which apparently is only made up of food or interior design accent pieces. Oftentimes, I'm asked to grant the Asian seal of approval for whatever side project they divulge to me, one they claim expresses their inner nature, be it bonsai, hot anime chicks in uniform, or origami bird earrings. This practice of honoring my culture, or any culture involving people of different pigmentations, is starting to wear me down. Those taiko ensembles with nary an Asian in the bunch, or the blues festivals held on rare sunny days, playing to an audience doused in Oregon-grown Pinot Gris and 75 SPF sunblock, with everyone nodding to the music made by the only folks in sight with a claim to ethnicity. So after years of enduring the internal parade of skinny white guys possessing pork pie hats and Asian girlfriends, and blissed out wiggers thumping day-long on African drums, I have come to one conclusion. My race is a commodity. In fact, any race outside Caucasian is a commodity. It's what keeps the Portland hipster machine going. How? By providing two crucial elements, cultural authenticity and street cred. Without us, there'd be no culinary wonderkin studded with tribal ink with 3-month-old yet already raved about by the New York Times ramen restaurant, all because he had the wherewithal to track down an apprentice with a Japanese master revered for his secret noodle-making techniques. And how would the media survive without the Portland small business success meme of willowy girls hacking vintage kimonos into adorable scarves while breastfeeding their wrens or atticuses? We're the raw material mined for the benefit of the greater hipster good, or at the very least provide ammo for those Yelp discussions as to who serves the most authentic sushi. So the next time a hipster sidles
And you are listening to KBOO, your community radio station. That was the Angry APA Minute. This is actually one of the reasons I love the APA Compass show. I'm Ani. I'm here with Paul this morning as we are continuing our spring membership drive here at KBOO, your very own community radio station. Shows like APA Compass come together because this is a perspective that is missing in our world, and it's one that is sorely missed, really. It is one that benefits us when we are able to actually hear voices and bridge communities and actually talk to each other, create dialogue, and talk about important issues of racism and alienation, talk about important issues of culture vulturing, of that appropriation that is rampant in white society. It is an important topic for so many people. I got to say, it's an important topic for us all. And that is what KABU does. KABU's public affairs programs brings volunteers from throughout the area to come in, learn radio skills, and to create programs that can generate fabulous public dialogue. And you are an important part of that because it's you that pays the bills. It is you that keeps us on the air. It is you that keeps the lights on and the antenna transmitting the signal at the mighty 90.7. Please give us a call now at 877-500-5266, 877-500-5266, and support the great work of the APA Compass, and support the great work of all the volunteers here at KABU Community Radio, 877-500-5266, or online at kboo.fm.
Yeah, I'm Paul, and yeah, that's really... really great to hear that on KABU, that commentary. You know, I left the country for a bunch of years, and this whole hipster thing, I pretty much missed it. It's
But you're back now, aren't you, Paul?
But I am. But, you know, the phenomenon isn't new, though. Cultural appropriation, that goes way back. And that's something we try to explore here on KABU. And I really appreciate hearing that from Sarika. And so, yeah, if that's something you value, please do give us a call, 877-500-5266, to keep this programming thriving and on the air. We thrive to be inclusive of many different voices, and this is just one of many.
Indeed. I mean, I think the radio zines really exemplify how different communities come together to provide information to everyone so that we can understand each other's struggles and we can actually see, in fact, all struggle is the same struggle when it comes right down to it. And we do that every weekday morning on the radio zine. We look at things like from the Old Mole Collective, looking at things through a socioeconomic perspective. And then we go on through. We have the bike show for bike community. We have It Takes a Village, which is coming up later this morning, looking at African-American community. We have the APA Compass, which is on right now, looking at issues of Asian and Pacific Islanders. And it's important that we all hear each other. We hear each other's message. We get each other's information. And we know that we are all in it together. 877-500-5266 is the number to call. And you can become a member of KABU right now. We have a $300 goal this morning to raise before 10 o'clock in the morning. And you, my friend, are, well, you're how we do it. Call in now with your pledge of support. Your contribution of $60 is a great way to start things off. You can do it $5 a month. You can do it all at once. How you do it is up to you. We just ask that you participate in KABU Community Radio right now. 877-500-5266. Or you can walk by 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, pay your pledge in person, and get a tour of the station. See how we actually put your money to work here, and get an idea of what community radio is like from the inside out. We encourage you to do that, but perhaps the easiest thing to do at this moment is pick up that phone and dial 877-500-5266.
Thank you, Ani and Paul, and thank you to all the listeners for supporting our membership special of APA Compass on KABU Community Radio. I'm Sarika Mehta. A recently released study entitled Go Home Terrorist, a report on bullying against Sikh American school children, illustrates the devastating experiences of Sikh American students. This study and its sense of urgency is the topic of today's discussion. I am joined today by fellow APA Compass colleague Andrew Ye in studio, and on the phone, we have scholar Jaydeep Singh. Jaydeep has a PhD in comparative ethnic studies, as well as affiliation with the Sikh American Legal Defense and Education Fund. He is an independent scholar affiliated with the Islamophobia Research and Documentation Project at UC Berkeley's Center for the Study of Race and Gender. Additionally, he is in the early stages of getting funding for a national Sikh American hate crime study. Jaydeep Singh, welcome to APA Compass.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you.
And good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Sarika.
So we'll begin first with Andrew Ye giving some context on bullying as a nationwide problem.
Sure. I want to explain a little bit about what bullying behaviors are for those people that maybe don't have school-age kids, or it's been a while since they've had their kids. So what is bullying? So bullying is unfair and one-sided behavior. And it happens actually when there's actually a power imbalance. And it's either repeated behavior, has the potential to be behavior that's repeated over time. It happens when somebody's been hurting or frightening or threatening or leaving somebody out on purpose. So it could be verbal, it could be social, it could be physical. So bullying actually peaks in middle school. It probably starts around fourth grade and peaks around sixth to eighth grade and then tapers off after that. There's actually a disproportionate amount of bullying that happens to students of non-majority race or religion. In addition, students who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, people with special health needs, they're all at greater risk of being bullied. So, and then if you try to break it down in terms of how different ethnic groups are affected by bullying. So Asian American kids are particularly affected by bullying. There was actually a study conducted in 2009 by the U.S. Justice and Education Department, which interviewed 6,500 students from the ages of 12 to 18. And they actually found that overall in the United States, about 31% of white teens were bullied. 34% of Hispanic teens were bullied. 38% of black teens and 54% of Asian American teens. So it was considerably more. So 31 to 54% for Asian Americans. So Asian Americans are particularly disproportionately affected by bullying.
A targeted group, it seems.
Mm-hmm. And so in this recent report by about the Sikh Americans, it even shows that Sikh Americans are worse than the average Asian American.
Right. And that's a good way to segue now to our friend on the phone, Jaydeep Singh. First, to give our listeners some other context, can you give us some basic information about Sikh Americans and Sikhism, just numbers and population centers across the nation, immigration waves and things like that?
Sure. Well, there are no actual data. There's no data from the census because it's a legal to count by religion. There's a scholar who studied the community for decades now. My guess would be there are at least 750 to 800,000 Sikhs in the United States. And in terms of population centers, every major city in the United States and most smaller cities have a gurdwara, which is a Sikh temple. And so the major centers of population, I would say maybe almost half the Sikhs in this country are in California. And there's also a huge population center in the tri-state area of New Jersey, New York, and Connecticut. And there are also very significant Sikh centers of population in places like Chicago, Detroit, Houston, Dallas, et cetera. So, you know, all major cities, but definitely California and the Northeast.
Right. And now to turn to the topic of bullying. According to the report, as we had mentioned previously, some of the staggering statistics included that Sikh American students experience far more bullying than the nationwide average. Can you comment on this?
Absolutely. I want to begin actually by thanking Hansdeep Singh, who's the co-founder of the International Center for Advocates Against Discrimination. He actually helped conduct these interviews for the Sikh Coalition's report, and he also very generously helped me prepare for this discussion. Just want to thank him to begin with. So in terms of bullying and Sikh children, as Andrew actually just mentioned, Sikhs encounter much higher bullying than other groups, according to national statistics. What's stunning is really just how much more. So this report, Go Home Terrorists, has found that the majority of Sikh children, just over 50%, endure school bullying. And for children who wear turbans, for Sikh youth who wear turbans, over two-thirds reported they were bullied. So, you know, it's not exceptional in any way. It's essentially normal. And to be honest, that 67% actually sounds low to me, because my experience is students that have that type of visible difference, you know, nearly universally experience discrimination, not only from other students, but also from teachers.
Right. And these are just the reported numbers, correct? This does not obviously entail, you know, unreported cases.
Exactly. And that's the problem I have with a lot of these statistics. I mean, if you look at the hate crimes since 9/11 and the numbers that have been proffered, they're really meaningless. I mean, they don't even account for a tiny, tiny percentage because of the number of people who do not report it. I mean, what are you going to do every time somebody calls you Osama or flips you off? You're going to call the cops.
Right.
And there's also the issue of people not being heard by the police and by authorities who have little interest in documenting these cases as hate crimes. I mean, it's essentially, it's more work, it's paperwork, you have to report to the government. And so there needs to be additional training at that level. And also just, you know, resistance from authorities who really were not at all supportive of victims of crime. So there are multiple levels of problems in terms of the statistics that do exist.
Of course, and we want to expand more on that in just a moment. I just want to remind our listeners that you're listening to APA Compass on KABU, and I'm Sarika Mehta, joined by fellow APA Compasser Andrew Ye in studio and scholar Jaydeep Singh by phone. We're discussing bullying against Sikh American children. We're going to turn now to Ani and Paul at Membership Central, who will let you know how you can support shows like APA Compass.
Well, there's a number. It's 877-500-5266, the second day of our spring membership drive. And we come to you over our airwaves and ask you to support these airwaves that bring you this kind of programming and other programs of equal value all through the week, day in, day out. And this is community radio. We have a diverse community, and we try to represent that diversity as best we're able. And so if you value that diversity, if you value what we bring you every day, please give us a call, 877-500-5266. And I'd like to thank the restaurants that today have provided food for our volunteers during this membership drive, and they are Petite Provence at 4834 Southeast Division, Riyadh's Lebanese at 1318 Southeast Hawthorne, and West Cafe at 1201 Southwest Jefferson.
Absolutely, and we want to thank you for making your contribution to KABU and for joining us as a member, as a participant today here at KABU, the mighty 90.7. We do it with your help. We only do it with your help. So please participate now at 877-500-5266. You can just pick up the phone and spend about 3 minutes speaking with one of our phone answering volunteers who will ask you how much you would like to give us in a year. You can do that all at once. You can do it every month, a little bit at a time. I know I'm able to make a much larger contribution by doing $15 a month than I could never come up with $180 at one time. It's just not like it's not let's say not realistic, but $15 a month, I can handle that. It's about an hour's wage. And so right now, what I'd ask people to do is think about donating an hour's wage every month to KABU and sort of spreading around that support, each person sharing what they really can share and helping us all stay afloat together. That is, in fact, the really sort of the crux of social change work. We each do what we can. Right now, we're asking you to support independent media so that we can keep bringing you programs like APA Compass, and we can keep training volunteers to create programs like APA Compass. Sarika and Andrew are bringing this program to you. There's several people that work on APA Compass, all sort of rotating around and taking turns, and it's nice to see Sarika back. She's been gone for a little bit, and we appreciate the work of the volunteers here so much, and we want to hear your support. That kind of appreciation for our volunteers means a whole lot too. So 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm.
And you know, I really appreciate hearing these stories. You know, that's the wonderful thing about the form of radio is the intimacy and immediacy of hearing the voice and hearing people from various communities give stories that you wouldn't ordinarily get to hear. You know, that's not part necessarily of, certainly not part of life, my life experience, what I'm hearing about the bullying in the Sikh community. And that's something that is really valuable. It's a window into another world. And KABU, you know, community radio does provide windows into other worlds that we may not be, you know, have access to. So this is an access point into those kind of worlds and other stories, and it's something, you know, we can learn from that, and that's what we really all need to learn from each other and share our stories and share what we know. And so if that's something you value, please call us at 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm and check it out.
It's or stop by 20 Southeast 8th and let us show you around. Let us give you a tour of the station. Let us thank you in person for becoming a member and participating here at KABU. It's not a spectator sport, right? Independent media takes everyone participating to keep us strong and independent. 877-500-5266. 877-500-5266.
Back to APA Compass on KBOO. I'm Sarika Mehta, joined by fellow APA Compass colleague Andrew Ye in studio and scholar Jaydeep Singh by phone. The topic of the discussion is bullying against Sikh American children. Before we went to break, Jay, you were talking a little bit about resistance and reporting numbers, which is why, although the numbers of the bullying that Sikh American students experience is, you know, is almost double, it's actually not a fully accurate number because of the lack of reported statistics. But what I want to turn to now, something that really surprised me from the report entitled "Go Home, Terrorist," from which we got all this information. Something that really surprised me is that it doesn't seem to make a difference whether a community is diverse or homogeneous, whether Sikh Americans make up a prominent portion of the community and hold leadership positions. These students are still experiencing bullying in the school and in the community. Can you expand on this?
Absolutely. I mean, wherever we are in this country, we're still in America. You know, the great African-American civil rights leader Malcolm X said that, you know, stop talking about North and South. As long as you're south of the Canadian border, you're south. This is very much an American problem. So if you look at what's happening to Sikh American children, it's very much a microcosm of what what adults who are Sikh, Muslim, South Asian, Arab have to endure in society in terms of the societal bigotry and stereotypes that have exploded since 9/11. I mean, as the report makes clear, the period since 9/11 has been particularly difficult for Sikh students, for all Sikh Americans. And while Sikh Americans experience bullying in their classrooms, their parents also endure astonishingly high rates of hate crimes, employment and housing discrimination, as well as the scrutiny they receive at the nation's airports. So as the report says, brown skin and turbans have become popularly associated with terrorism.
Right.
So the crude stereotypes you see of terrorists and these erroneous, damaging media images that have continued to be proffered since 9/11, they've certainly been harmful to Sikh children as well.
Right. So this bullying is happening in the schools and in public schools, places where there is some expectation of safety. So are the teachers and administrators aware that this is happening? Why don't the adults prevent it?
See, I think this is really the ultimate question that emerges from this report. As shocking as the statistics are, you really have to wonder, why aren't these children being protected? And why aren't the adults doing their jobs to enable the children to learn? So I think one of the things that has to come from this, and, there are a lot of recommendations, but one thing I would add to that is I think the onus really needs to be placed on the adults within the school system to take this issue seriously, really for the first time, because for too long students have had to suffer racism because teachers have simply allowed children to be children. I mean, like, one of the most alarming statistics I think that comes out of this report is it says 54.5% of Sikh students in Fresno County, which is in Central California, say they're bullied at school, and a majority of those say that educators do nothing about it when it's reported. And, you know, this problem is pervasive, and it echoes problems that I encountered as a child in Michigan in the 1970s, and it's truly heartbreaking to see how little has changed. So, I mean, certainly I allow for the fact that we have been cutting education as a society for an extremely long time. Our money's been going elsewhere. We've made those decisions, you know, at a political level. So schools are consequently understaffed. Teachers are under-resourced. Most teachers don't have the time, training, and expertise. And unfortunately, a lot of them don't have the interest to deal with these issues. So consequently, in a time of harsh budget cuts, this is going to be one of the first things that's ignored. But we can see the results of this neglect in the disfigured lives of the innocent children in both the Sikh American community and many other communities of color who are different.
Right. Actually, that is a good segue into my next set of questions, which are the consequences of long-term, ongoing bullying. These children grow up to be adults. Do you have any comments on those experiences?
Yes. I mean, I think it's very important to look at the long-term effects of bullying. Well, first of all, let's look at the immediate effects. When students feel emotionally and physically unsafe, their attendance falls, their grades can fall because of either actual or psychosomatic illnesses. They engage in elective truancy, and they even go to the extent of dropping out at a much higher rate. So I think we need to look at the immediate effects and also the long-term effects in terms of post-traumatic stress disorder, in terms of various social phobias that can arise from this type of violence. And it's, I mean, that, I think that points to the, impetus and, the imperative to really take this issue seriously. Because I think, let me give you an example of just, how horrific things are. For example, there's a suit filed by the American Civil Liberties Union very recently on behalf of a Buddhist child who was harassed in Louisiana. And, you can say it's the South, it's in the Bible Belt, but I would contend this is actually very representative of the type of discrimination that children who are different face in the society at an institutional level. So, in this case, ACLU is suing a school board in Louisiana, alleging that officials, not children, officials at one of its schools harassed a sixth grader because of Buddhist faith, and the district also routinely pushed Christian beliefs.
I do remember seeing this headline.
Yeah, so the lawsuit said that there's a science teacher who's, quote, repeatedly taught students that the earth was created by God 6,000 years ago, that evolution is, quote, unquote, impossible, and the Bible is, quote, unquote, 100% true. She regularly features religious questions on her science tests, including one which says, isn't it amazing what the blank has made? When the Buddhist child did not write in her expected answer of Lord, she belittled him in front of the entire class. While studying other religions, she also told students that Buddhism is stupid. Moreover, speaking to the blatantly Christian supremacist atmosphere at the school, it regularly incorporates official Christian prayer into class and school events, and it scrolls Bible verses on an electronic marquee in front of the school that greets students when they enter the building. When the Buddhist family objected, the superintendent of the school system told them that, quote, this is the Bible Belt, unquote. And it suggested that they change their son's faith. So this is the reality that's confronted by children of racial and religious minorities in this society.
And this was a public school, I want to remind our listeners.
It is. Thank you, yes.
Yeah, so the racism seems like the bullying that Sikh American students experience in these public schools is maybe just one example of racism in the larger community. Is that your feeling as well?
Absolutely. And, we're not really dealing with these issues, right? We're living in this post-racial America, as we like to call it, which is really it's a self-congratulatory fantasy. And, even when we do talk about race, the discussions are very shallow. We'll focus on someone like Donald Sterling or Cliven Bundy.
Right.
But we won't look at the system that creates these people or the other 29 owners who protected Donald Sterling for 3 decades. So, we don't have any depth to our discussions of race. And diversity is not even an issue any longer. If you look, certainly that contributes significantly, the lack of diversity among teachers and educational administrators. So this, they don't understand what the students are going through. And even more important, I think, but equally important, is discussions of racial diversity remain absent in our schools. And that's really absolutely, to me, determinative. As an historian, I got this education in college. I was very fortunate to have access to that. But I can't emphasize how important that is. That along with an honest rendering of our blood-drenched history of racial supremacy in this country, we really have to try to rectify our historical amnesia, because it serves us very poorly on many fronts, such as race relations. We've forgotten who we are. We have tremendous historical amnesia when it comes to race and our history of race.
Absolutely. And the sense that I'm getting from you is that the bullying that is experienced by these communities and the hate crimes that is also experienced by these communities, that they are heavily related, that that you can't say that they're just two coincidental entities.
No, absolutely. It's part and process. It's part and parcel of who we are as a society. It's certainly, it is a product of societal bigotry. Look at since 2008, right? Since when post-racial America ostensibly began, subconscious racism, implicit racism against both African Americans and Mexican Americans has gone up in this country, right? And if you look at the number of patriot groups, which are virtually all white, armed militias, since Obama was elected, they've grown about 900% from 149 in 2008 to about 1,500 right now. So what we've seen also is a very rapid growth in white supremacist organizing and group formation since President Obama's election. And there's no discussion on it. Like I said, we focus on this Donald Sterling's and Clive and Bundy's, but we don't look at the deeper
systemic problem.
Forces. Yeah, there's a great quote from a man named Mark Potok from the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is a group that tracks hate crimes as well as hate groups. And he says that very clearly the main driver of the growth of these groups, and he's talking about these white supremacist groups as well as these militias, is the changing demographics of the United States as personified by a black guy in the White House. So I think it's really important to think about how things really aren't getting better in the society. Things are becoming significantly worse in post-racial America.
Right.
Because, I mean, look at the Tea Party. Look at the opposition to President Obama. We've seen the resurrection of ugly racial stereotypes in, you know, an open society that we haven't seen since basically, you know, the pre-civil rights era.
So in addition, you've written about institutionalized racism where, you know, for the official law enforcement is used as a form of social control in our society. Could you tell us more about that?
Sure. Well, basically, I don't know how relevant this is, but I think in terms of police, what we've seen the last several years are massive outbreaks of protest against police violence. There was one this past week in Albuquerque, New Mexico. For the past 6 months, Anaheim, the happiest place on earth, has been the black and brown communities there have been protesting against police violence in their communities. And so what my work looks at more broadly is it looks at the role of police violence and, you know, how historically it was about controlling access to white supremacist privileges. You know, we always talk about lynchings and the social aspect of lynchings telling all black people you are never safe. You must do what you are told. If you step out of place, you will be punished. But, you know, if you look at the numbers on lynching, only a couple hundred people a year, and again, that's an incredible number of people, don't get me wrong, but only roughly about a couple hundred people died a year from lynching through that period of the 1870s to 1930s or 40s. But if you look at the number of people who died in chain gangs, when police officers could literally pick up any black young man, and we're talking black children, off the street and put them into a chain gang, and this again was basically how much of the South was developed. The railroads are built this way, the roads, by virtual slaves. So the chain gangs, which were an actual replacement for slavery in terms of labor, cost the lives of thousands and thousands of young black men and children every year. That's something we've never discussed. It was all about the security apparatus. And, you know, so it makes sense today that we have the criminalization of people of color in terms of our prisons. So, I mean, that's kind of the role. That's kind of some of the work that I do. I don't know how really relevant it is to this discussion.
Well,
but certainly in the broader terms of race and white supremacy in society, I think it makes sense.
Right. These pieces of history are, you know, they're all tied. I was curious about one thing, to go back to the children and students and their experiences for a moment. The report says that this is mostly due to post-9/11 racial epithets. Prior to 9/11, what was the status of Sikh American children and students in schools regarding safety and socialization?
I would say it would be identical or worse. Only reason it'd be worse is because there was no discussion at all. It was just an accepted part of life that if you were different, this is what you would have to go through. And so I was a student in middle school, as Andrew was talking about, the time of where bullying really tends to peak. And that's when I was in Michigan at the time, and that was during the Iran hostage crisis.
I see.
So as you can imagine, it wasn't an easy time.
No, probably
it certainly
not.
Was. Yeah, and it certainly was pervasive, and it wasn't just in schools. I mean, I had a couple incidents with my father when I was out around town. So again, I mean, I think it's really a societal problem. This is just a way in which children are mimicking their parents.
Right. I want to just hold on that for a moment and remind our listeners that you are listening to APA Compass on KBOO. This is our membership drive special. I'm Sarika Mehta, and I'm joined in studio by my colleague Andrew Ye from APA Compass and scholar Jaydeep Singh by phone. I'd like to welcome Ani and Paul to speak to us more about the importance of KBOO and shows like APA Compass.
Actually, it's just Paul right now. And I would like to just thank APA Compass for this program. I'm listening intently, and I'm really getting a lot out of it. And this is something that I find a value personally in what KBOO does and tries to do, and sharing with the community these stories. And I hope you value it too. And if you're listening, I'm sure you do value it. And if you want to express that value, your appreciation, one way to do that is to call us up at 877-500-5266. This is our second day of our spring membership drive, and we're coming to you to ask for your participation in this ongoing work, because this is work. It takes a lot of work to get behind the veneer of whatever Portlandia, sort of the, everybody sort of getting along here in Portland. But there's some really deep realities that you're hearing here today, and you hear on a lot of programs here on KBOO, people really exploring these generally unexplored dimensions in the mass, the rest of the media, and elsewhere in our culture. And we take this seriously, and I hope you do too. So please call us up at 877-500-5266, or go to our website at kboo.fm, or come on down 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Once again, I would like to also express my appreciation for the restaurants that have provided food for this membership drive today: Petite Provence at 4834 Southeast Division, Riyadh's Lebanese at 1318 Southeast Hawthorne, West Cafe at 1201 Southwest Jefferson. We do have volunteers here standing by waiting to take your phone call. They are just sitting there waiting, and we would like to hear from you. Please call us up, 877-500-5266. If you're a regular listener of APA Compass, if you're just tuning in for the first time and you value hearing these stories, this in-depth analysis of the realities of, you know, this really difficult hidden history, the historical amnesia that's being talked about, the need to really explore at a deeper level, to really engage each other, to engage different communities in a real discussion of what's really going on with the history, the work that we need to do to get over in this supposedly post-racial time, as you're hearing about. So give us a call at 877-500-5266. That's the number to call, 877-500-5266, or kboo.fm.
Thank you, Paul, and thank you to the listeners who are supporting us at APA Compass on KBOO. I'm Sarika Mehta, and I'm joined in studio by Compass colleague Andrew Yeh, and on the phone we have our scholar Jaydeep Singh. We're discussing the bullying of Sikh American students in schools, and also in a greater context of how this relates to race, you know, systemic racism and hate crimes. In fact, we want to get into really the crux of with the 9/11 crisis. So even though Sikh Americans were not in any way associated with the 9/11 terrorist attacks, violence against this community sharply increased. And what I want to get to is the fact that it has been said that the media, it was in part responsible. So Jay, do you have any comments about that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've written actually extensively about this. If you look at 9/11 and you look at the portrayals that occurred, I mean, immediately afterward, you already, within minutes of the attacks, you had pictures of the Taliban and Osama bin Laden on television. And so, you know, and of course, we had no idea who was responsible at that time. We can, of course, make assumptions, et cetera, right? But from the very first moments of the attack, there was a support, a confirmation of this image that already exists in the Western mind, which equates turban and beard and brown skin with terrorism. And so that image was reinforced very early on by the media. And, you know, I mean, the thing that's really interesting, if you look at that time period, and if you look at the first person who was killed after 9/11 in a hate crime, it was a Sikh American named Balbir Singh Sodhi. Right? He's the first person killed in a domestic terrorist attack after 9/11. And if you ask most Americans about who Balbir Singh Sodhi was, you're going to get a blank stare.
Right.
In fact, if you look at the history of that time period, Sikh Americans are almost entirely missing from our history of 9/11, as well as other brown Americans who experienced what was the worst hate crime epidemic in modern U.S. history. Yet that hate crime epidemic, like much of our racial history, has been erased from our memory of that time period. And, you know, a really good example, I think, of the power of the media and the mistakes it made were not only Balbir Singh Sodhi. First of all, when on the rare instances when Balbir Singh Sodhi's murder was talked about in the media, they almost never had his photograph. Now, this is really striking because this is a man who was killed because of the way he looks. And yet, the media didn't think it was noteworthy. You know, this is, again, a media that obsesses about race when the it's a crime committed by a black or brown person. So, Balbir Singh Sodhi is invisible. And that's, I think that's very clear now. If you look 13 years later, no one really knows who he is. He's not related to hate crimes in the way we think of Matthew Shepard or James Byrd Jr. or any number of other people. The one Sikh whose image was pushed all over the entire world was a man named Sher Singh, who was taken off a train a few days after 9/11 in Providence, Rhode Island. This was an engineer, and it became a national news story that a quote-unquote suspicious man was taken off a train. And so they took this man off the train, and they showed images of him with a long flowing beard and a green turban being led away in handcuffs by police. The only thing he was charged for was carrying a weapon, which was not even a weapon. The charges later dropped. It was a Sikh kirpan, which is a religious symbol. It's not a weapon at all. So just the twin, you know, those two stories, how Balbir Singh Sodhi is erased and how Sher Singh is portrayed as a prototypical terrorist, I mean, that speaks to how the media was very responsible and basically replicated the same Orientalist stereotypes that it's always replicated.
It's a lot of education and responsibility that needs to take place. And so speaking of which, Sikh Americans are, by numbers, a small minority in the United States. How do we make this larger public think and talk about these issues?
Well, I think before we get to that, could I... actually, I want to make a quick point to speak to just how invisible Sikh Americans are. There was a massacre at a Sikh Gurdwara in August of 2012. And that occurred 2 weeks after the shooting in Aurora and about 3 months before the shooting in Newtown. And so it became very stark how different the media attention was,
right,
which is what you're talking about, right? When you compare the media attention that the massacre received. And again, this was a really important thing because if you look at this, there were six people killed, four others shot. This is the worst massacre in a sacred site since the Jim Crow era. So this is historically a significant religious massacre, and yet the media basically ignored it. Because when you compare the media attention it received in comparison to the mass shooting just a few weeks earlier in Aurora, this disparity was prompted Dr. Nonihal Singh to ask in a New Yorker piece, why wasn't Oak Creek being treated as an American tragedy? He said, only one network sent an anchor to report live from Oak Creek, and none of the networks gave the murders in Wisconsin the kind of extensive coverage that the Colorado shootings received. The print media also quickly lost interest. It's hard to escape the conclusion that Oak Creek would have similarly dominated the news cycle if the shooter had been Muslim and the victims had been white church goers. So, I mean, I think that certainly speaks to the value of different lives in our society. And, you know, how do Sikhs, as well as other groups of color, how do we deal with these issues? How do we get mainstream attention? Well, I think, first of all, we have to form coalitions. We have to form coalitions with other oppressed communities, as well as civil rights and children's groups. And I think that's starting to happen. But what I think is even more important, and the Sikh Coalition's report certainly speaks to this in their policy recommendations, we have to demand responsiveness from government entities on the local, state, and federal levels to distribute information about the problem and to, like I, you know, as I mentioned earlier, really take it seriously.
Absolutely.
And I think this is the only way. Yeah, I think it's the only way it's going to move forward because, as I said, it's not a new problem.
Right. Right. Unfortunately, we are out of time. So, Jaideep Singh, thank you so much for joining Andrew Ye and myself on APA Compass today. This has been a really illuminating discussion on a very important topic.
Could I add one more thing quickly?
Very, very quickly.
I would point parents to an article called Teaching Tolerance by Melinda Moyer on Slate.com.
On Slate.com, okay.
Yes, and talks how to prevent children from growing up with racial prejudices.
Okay, thank you.
Colorblind is not the answer.
Exactly. So again, thank you so much for joining us and for the Teaching Tolerance article plug. We've been discussing bullying against Sikh American children.
Start with this.
You can read the full report entitled Go Home Terrorist at seekcoalition.org. You're listening to APA Compass on KBOO Community Radio, and we're going to turn to Membership Central so that they can tell you how you can support KBOO and shows like APA Compass.
Yes, thank you very much for that. And I'm Paul, and Justin has stepped in for Ani for this next break here. And I'd like to thank Patty from North Portland, who's renewed her membership, and Brian from Monmouth, who's joined to be a new member. Thank you very much to Patty and Brian.
I'm guessing what they did was they called that number, and that's what we're briefly interrupting programming for this morning, is to ask listeners out there in radio land to take a small amount of responsibility to make sure that so many rich, diverse voices are able to get on the air. And APA Compass is a signature program on this effort, and we hope you call right now and support that program. Toll free, 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO. Of course, you can always do that online securely at kboo.fm.
And we do like to, you know, spread it around to more people. We seem to be picking up some membership. People seem to be liking what we're doing here at KBOO. And, you know, it really doesn't take that much. We have a low-income membership at $20 a year that gives you full voting rights here at KBOO, regular membership of $40. But, you know, if you have a little bit more of a expendable income to send our way, we really appreciate that. $120 a year is only, $10 a month.
And the way they get that involvement going is at 877-500-5266. Paul, I'd say you're spot on. I mean, there are people who maybe can give us $50 in a year, and there are people who can maybe give us $500 in a year. But I think what's really critical is making sure that we're being able to count everyone and count that involvement. So I think that more even than the amount you choose to give is that you stand up and get counted and take a little bit of responsibility, because it doesn't mean much to say that the public owns the airwaves if the public doesn't have access, doesn't have a portal to those airwaves. And Fox News and MSNBC isn't going to do it. And we are doing so much more than that with so little. You know, I was saying, Paul, the other day, never have such modest contributions amounted to such Himalayan accomplishments. And that's what we're asking you to get involved with by calling us at 877-500-KBOO.
And you know, we really don't have a huge budget. It's we make do on $739,000 a year. That's, you know, for an organization like KBOO with so much going on, so much equipment to maintain, so many things to coordinate.
So much duct tape, chewing gum, and baling wire to purchase. Right. You're right. It is astonishing how much we accomplish. $84 an hour, Paul. $84 an hour, we managed to train thousands upon thousands of volunteers. We've managed to conduct thousands upon thousands of interviews. 23 million commercial-free minutes and counting at $84 an hour. It's not top-heavy. It costs about $2,000 a day. So maybe, dear listeners, you could put up 10 cents or 25 cents or a dollar a day when you call 877-500-5266. Of course, you can always do that online at kboo.fm.
You know, as I said, from what I've heard, membership is picking up, and we have 4,500 members. Just think what we could do if we had 5,000, 6,000 members, you know, and if people took it upon themselves to just come down and pay it just as like, this is a part of your life. This is a part of, you know, it's like, I don't know, like paying union dues or something, you know. KBOO is something that is always has been here for you for 46 years, is continuing to be here, is continuing as a part of this really vital community here. And, you know, if people just regularly paid through the, you know, electronic fund transfer or however they do it, we might even be able to diminish some of the time we come asking you for money. If people just take that responsibility and just know that that's what they do every year, give money to KBOO.
I think you're absolutely right. That's why people are moving to their phone, calling 877-500-5266. Though, of course, a small point, I'm not going to apologize that briefly during the year we come and get to interact directly with people in Radio Land. I think it's a time to check in on the state of the station. but I do think you're absolutely right that many hands make light lifting, and that's why I think that the amount of money that people are choosing isn't even as important as sort of signing on. I mean, people are saying, oh, well, I can't give $1,000, so I'm not going to call. You know, that's really not the point. And I also think that, you know, it keeps us on our toes. After 46 years, both the listeners and the producers of KBOO content have to remember we can't take anything for granted. I think the listeners can count on us as sort of moral furniture. We're there. We're just there. And that's fabulous that we've been around long enough to accomplish that. And we can't just assume that people are always going to be listening or that we don't have to continue to work on our content. So I think it's a relationship on both sides. And as we continue to try and be tweaking schedules and bringing in ever more new volunteers, hopefully the listeners will also notice changes in signal and content and remember that the only way we're able to do that is because they sort of take a little bit of responsibility, like those union dues. They joined a long time ago with their ears, and now it's just a small matter of the bill, dear listener. Call us right now, won't you? Toll free, 877-500-5266. That's toll free from anywhere in North America, 877-500-KBOO.
You've been listening to APA Compass. We want to say a special thank you to our guests, Dr. Jadeep Singh and Linda Uweki-Absher. Today's program was produced by Sarika Mehta and Andrew Ye. Tune in to APA Compass on the first Friday of every month at 9 a.m. here on KBOO Community Radio. If you have questions, comments, or ideas, you can connect with us through our Facebook account. Podcasts are available on apacompass.wordpress.com. Thank you for listening to APA Compass.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 9:56 a.m. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 here, Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 on It Takes a Village, host Shahid Hamid interviews Portland soul singer LaRonda Steele. At 11:30, the radio zine. Sarah Von Gelder, co-founder and executive editor of Yes! Magazine, talks about the current issue, Education Uprising, and the forthcoming issue on media and storytellers. And when you call with your pledge of financial support for KBOO Community Radio, ask the volunteer who takes your call at 877-500-5266 about how you can get hooked up with a year's subscription to Yes! Magazine. Stay tuned. Keep it locked right here for more top quality news and public affairs information on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 FM Hood River in the Gorge, 104.3 FM Philomath and Corvallis. Stay tuned.
I'm Don Merrill, and I've been talking to as many Oregon State judicial, legislative, and gubernatorial candidates for 2014 office as I can. and I've been talking to them all. Deep Blue, Progressive, Liberal, Democratic, Centrist, Independent, Republican, Conservative, Libertarian, Deep Red. Many of these candidates get ignored by the mainstream media, but they're not ignored here. Hear these interviews on my podcast at www.kbu.fm/between us. Listen to the people who want to lead you in 2014. Oregon State judicial, legislative, and gubernatorial candidate interviews at my podcast, www.kbu.fm/between us.
KBU at the Clinton every second Thursday at 7 p.m. This month, KBU is proud to show the documentary Queen of the Sun, What Are the Bees Telling Us? The film is an alternative look at the global bee crisis. Before the film will be a short discussion with bee experts on how to help save the bees. That's Thursday, May 8th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.